2023 is upon us, and the Phoenix Suns are in the middle of it, but we're ignoring all of that for today. Instead, we are focused on outlandish predictions for the year 2023 here in the Valley. Let's go.
On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you all for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Friday. Happy New Year. We haven't really celebrated it the right way. So whatever platform you're on, YouTube, Google, Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you watch podcasts, hit subscribe or follow. Get this show in your feed every single Monday through Friday. We'll celebrate the new year today with some craziness. We'll have game recaps and all the rest as the season goes along. At long last, it's been like 2 weeks, Aaron, since you were here. Aaron Edwards is joining us. Holiday break last week, and this week was full of games and whatever else. But we are both, you and I think, very ready to not think about the actual performance of this Suns team for at least one day. So we're going to not do that. We're going to give predictions. I don't know how what the scope of yours are, or like the theme of it or anything. So I don't even want to put too much of a description on it, but I will give you the floor to go first with prediction number one. I'm calling them outlandish. Maybe you took it in a very serious direction, but yeah. You have the floor.
I mean, it's serious-ish. I mean, I think one of ours is going to overlap because you have said this before.
Okay.
But thank you again for not making me talk about this team, this current team. I'm so glad we don't have to do that.
They don't exist. For this half hour, they're not real. They only exist in our imaginations.
For my first one, I actually made it kind of serious, but I don't think Chris Paul is going to last in this team. I think James Jones is secretly trying to get feelers out for Chris Paul.
That was number one for me too, so...
I knew it was going to be overlap on that one.
We're one for one already. Yeah, the way I worded it is this is Chris Paul's last season in Phoenix. It sounds like your timeline is a lot shorter than that. This might be his last month in Phoenix. Is that your prediction?
I think it would be stupid. I've said a bunch of times on here, like, we can't get into James Jones's head. He keeps everything pretty close to the vest, even though Windhorst is like, he don't keep it that close to the vest. He's stubborn. But I think I think it would be like malpractice for him to not put out feelers for this, because our problems go way beyond Chris Paul, and he is a big problem in it, though. And I feel like you have to put feelers out for that.
I think that's actually, a good way to put it for me, because I've had some back and forth with people online in the comments on the show and on Twitter and whatever recently about just how much of a problem Chris actually is. I don't think he is like so bad that he's causing the team to lose, but I think the reality is the team was built in a way that was based on him being amazing, and he's definitely not that anymore. And so it wouldn't so much be like you're getting rid of Chris Paul if it was this season, or even if it's this offseason. Like, the way people should be thinking about it, as far as I think, is less so like you're getting rid of Chris Paul because he's so much of a like anchor weighing you down. And it's more so like, can you use Chris Paul or the flexibility of getting rid of him to make the rest of the stuff better? And that's kind of, I know you've like given me my props about this, but that's where my head was at back when we were talking about KD, and I was saying the salaries line up. That's probably the best way. I didn't actually think it was going to happen because that's not a good enough trade asset. But like, that's where my head was at. It's like, I don't think Chris Paul is cooked or done or awful, but it's like, he might be your best path to getting better because these other guys haven't proven themselves at all to be good assets right now.
Yeah, I think with the iteration of like this team right now, I think even a net neutral Chris Paul just doesn't help this team. Like, it's just, he has to be amazing for his like for everything he does to impact the team. I mean, he gave us what, 23 yesterday or 2 days ago?
And 25, yeah.
Yeah, 25. And you kind of didn't feel it because like the things that he does like doesn't really equate to a team this bad right now. So yeah, I think that would just have to happen to at least try to dig yourself out of the hole with the many problems we have. Like, I think just that kind of piece can kind of start filling some of the holes, because I think if he's gone, like that Chris Paul hole, it was probably bigger like last year, but it's not really like a problem right now. I think we could kind of tape something together. I think with like, even with how we have Rubio before, I think somebody like that would fit in more. We don't need like the point guard anymore. Like, I don't think that's what this team needs at the moment.
Yeah. And I think like, I don't know, that watching him be in a little bit of a different role, it's not to say that he's not, again, he's been fine. I think people should actually just like look at his stats this season. It's really not that ugly. I think the worst thing that I would say that's been a pretty big step back, obviously his aggressiveness, the scoring, all that, that's the reason he's taken a step back. But just from like a, what is he actually, how is he hurting the team? I think the biggest way he's hurting the team is turning the ball over, but it's not that ugly. But I think watching him do it in a different role, like we had all talked about, I'm realizing more and more that like, you kind of need to be a better defender than he is if you're going to do that. And you need to be a little more versatile. And I don't even mean that like being able to do different stuff, because he's fine off the ball, but he's also not very big, which sounds obvious. Duh, Chris Paul's not big. But like, you think about Rubio or like Marcus Smart or whatever, Reggie Jackson, some of these guys who are like pseudo point guards, but on teams that actually like the other guys handle the ball a lot.
Yeah.
They're all very good, pretty good defenders. I don't want to call Rubio a very good defender, but pretty good. And they're at least like 6'4". You know what I mean? And so you can put them in a bunch of different roles. Chris Paul, like his defense isn't really there. He's 5'10". And so you're kind of talking about like a spot up shooter who defends like the worst guy on the opposing team. I think I overstated what that transition to the other type of role was really going to look like. And maybe that's on me.
Yeah, I think that he hasn't been a disaster. And if anything, this isn't on him. Like, the trade in my head isn't on Chris Paul. It's mostly because Mikal Bridges has been kind of trash. And I think that we have had to become one-dimensional and go back to the old stuff again. Because when he was off ball and we were letting Mikal initiate the offense, it at the beginning of the season, it was working. But he just kind of went cold. And we have to get buckets, and like the only way we pretty much can is if we go back to the bread and butter with pick and roll with Chris Paul, because when we run it with Mikal Bridges, it's just a nightmare right now. And then when they sit, we're running it with Shamit, and that's also a nightmare. So I think just like both of those combined with Mikal not really taking the leap that we need ball handling wise, is we probably need one for Chris Paul to kind of fill in some of those gaps.
Yeah, and look, he's at next season, he's at $30.8 million. Like,
yes.
he just isn't worth that if this is the player that he's going to be. And I mean, like, that's probably like, you know, disrespectful in some ways, but I think if you're James Jones, if you're being realistic, if you're even Devin Booker, like, you have to just start to look at it realistically. And he's not a guy that's producing at $31 million over the full course of a season. He's only guaranteed for half. So you actually, the way a lot of people have talked about this, the way that it could work by doing it that way, because he also has the fully non-guaranteed year after that. So really he's on the books for two more seasons, but only $15 million guaranteed. So what that allows you to do with the stretching is you can pay him that $15 million over 5 years, because you multiply it by two and add one. So really, like, we knew all along James Jones created an out for himself to stretch Chris Paul. Like, that was why they did the contract that way. One is so you don't have to pay him a bunch of money, the non-guarantees in the first place, but having it structured with the fully non-guaranteed year, which really you don't have to do, that just allows you to stretch him. Obviously, they could also trade him. There's a whole bunch of options, but yeah, I don't even feel like that one's very outlandish, to be honest. Like you said, I feel like it's kind of like we're heading there.
Yeah, I was like, that was when, that's why I let off. I was like, this is going to be overlap on this one because you said it already. But it was probably the most obvious, like, it would probably be outlandish to people outside of us, I think. But yeah, it just seems like one of those things that sort of needs to happen, but it's also crazy at the same time because, once again, we were in the finals 2 years ago.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, well, my prediction number two is kind of along the lines of what we're talking about. It relates to one of the people that have already come up. It's been in Suns fans' minds quite a bit. I've yelled at them on this show about it, but I'm actually going to go in a different direction than I have in the past, so we'll get to that one in just a second. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by LinkedIn. As a small business owner or hiring manager, you know that success in 2023 all depends on the team members you surround yourself with. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs in the new year. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. I don't know if you've logged onto LinkedIn lately, but I literally tapped the jobs thing halfway by accident, and it was prompting me to fill out a whole profile, a whole series of qualifications and whatever. They are very serious about this. They want everybody who goes on LinkedIn to get in the right places, which means as a hiring person, that's going to help you as well. LinkedIn Jobs helps you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with targeting tools, including their resume data by using insights from your job post company and their 875 million member profiles. Identify the most qualified candidates on LinkedIn Jobs and connect with them fast and for free. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate those applicants based on your qualifications, all on one platform. So you can review, screen, rate, all of it in one place. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, Aaron, I'll kick us off for prediction number two here, and it is that James Jones stays in place under Matt Ishbia in his new role, which he just got promoted to as president, but I say the Suns hire a GM outside of the organization.
All right, we're overlapping a lot.
Is that what you said? Was that yours?
Yeah, I was like, I didn't think he would be fired, like, a lot of people were saying, or he's like this terrible. I think we didn't have enough people in the office to begin with. I think we're going to have a fully staffed office and we can finally hire like a GM while James Jones kind of does like the overhead stuff. And he can be like the player guy. Like when we bring people like free agents in and stuff, we can have James Jones be there and he can be like the face of the GM, but we need like, and I think we're going to have like an actual GM.
I don't even think it would be for the worst either. Like I think people, and I mean, look, I can't predict the future. There's obviously a world in which Ishbia just hires a GM and then it's like a Landry Fields out in Atlanta situation where that guy suddenly all of a sudden one day is calling the shots. And I'm sure Travis Schlenk is not super thrilled about how that all went down. So it's going to raise some eyebrows and maybe rightly so, but I actually don't even think it would be like a worst case scenario for the skill set that James Jones has. Like I think we all know the culture setting, the way that like he really just kind of provided the stability and everything. That's, you can take that or leave it. We don't all know exactly what that is. Everybody says it, but who knows? I think that the other part of it though is like if you listen to what Monty or even like Morgan Cato when she got hired, or you just like read what people say about James Jones, it really is like the best skill he seems to have is like that top level vision. You know what I mean? And like, I think you mentioned they don't have a big staff. I do think that a little bit of that has gotten overblown. I think the timing of some of the articles that came out over the summer were kind of crappy because they actually were spending a lot. Like if you look at their, like it's on their website, it's on like Real GM. If you just look at their staff directory, there's way more people than there were like 2-3 years ago. But him having the vision of like, all right, we're going to hire somebody like a Morgan Cato from the league office to handle, you know, player development as like a holistic person, or we're going to hire, you know, so-and-so to kind of run our like team operations and we're going to look at analytics this different way and we're going to build a practice facility. Like he's overseen a lot of that in a way that I think people really praise him for. But obviously we know that they're like the minutia nonsense stuff like that matters. You have to be really nerdy and good at like manipulating the CBA and whatever like that. You have to, there's no way around that. So maybe it would be better to have somebody take that over.
Yeah, I think that he likes that stuff more. Like he likes being the head of the head. Like I think he wants to be right below the owner and take his orders directly from him and not have to do like draft analysis like he doesn't like, or just even looking at like potential free agents and like all the small stuff on putting the team together. I think he has broad ideas of how he wants the team to look, but I think putting the smaller pieces together, I don't think he wants to do that. And I could see them just hiring somebody to take care of that instead.
I mean, is his best skill like just evaluating what he's been as a GM? Like, I think you could make the case his best skill has been like working with Sarver, like making that relationship work. I think that's probably what McDonough was the worst at. And like, I'm sure the common denominator there being Sarver is the bigger problem, but the you got to deal with who you got to deal with in your work. I feel like that's kind of the best thing, the thing he's been best at. So yeah, you're probably right to put it that way. I wonder, I was trying to think of who. I wanted to get really outlandish and like throw a name out there, but it would have just been complete BSing. But I wanted to be like, is Jason Richardson about to be the GM or Zach Randolph? I would love a connection with Ishbia, but I would also feel like that is potentially one of those things that's cute when you're a new owner and then you look back and you're like, I kind of set the team back for a decade. Like, I don't
just like finally bringing Nash back and giving him like the worst job he's ever had.
Yeah, bring Dan Marley back or something like that. No, I don't have any guesses as to who it would be, but we've seen this work, like, you know, Pat Riley and Andy Ellisberg. Like, that's the best example I think of it. Like, if you hear like, you know, inside NBA people, they all say like that Ellisberg guy, like he's a master of the cap, like the Jimmy Butler trade. Remember how they got him and they had like no space and no assets. All of a sudden Jimmy Butler was on their team. That's all that guy. And then obviously we know Pat Riley's Pat Riley. I'm not saying James Jones can be that level, but I think he could be that type of like overseer of everything.
Yeah. I think a lot of those dudes have, I'm not sure if James has shown us the level of ruthlessness it takes at the job yet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just a part of it. Like, I'm not saying it's like the NFL and like cut somebody a leave, but I'm not sure. The NBA is a friendship business and Pat Riley has always made it very clear that you ain't his friend, but we can't win together. And I just don't think James Jones like has that part of it.
We all make fun, or like NBA fans love to make fun of the Suns for different stuff that's come up. Because people think they're corny or they talk trash when they're ahead or whatever it is. One thing that I guess I shouldn't be putting it on blast on this podcast because people listen to this podcast, but one thing that I think people would be making fun of James Jones a lot more for if they all knew about it is, have you ever heard him talk about this 3x5 thing with the note card and whatever about his team building philosophy? So it's like, he talked more about it when he first took over, but basically the idea being like, you know, how that isn't a note card like 3x5 or something like that in terms of the dimensions. So he says,
yeah,
he wants three people at all five positions. And that's how he thinks about team building. He's like, all right, so I have two guys who can play center this summer. I have to get one. That'll be three. Like, this is literally what he will tell you if he explains how he builds an NBA team. And I just am glad that more people on NBA Twitter and NBA Reddit and whatever else don't know about that, because we would get laughed at, I think, a lot more.
His theory on wings must be on like a piece of cardboard or something.
Construction paper for the point guards. Yeah, it's bad. It's one of those things. What I mean is, it sounds really bad. I'm not trying to say the dude doesn't know basketball. He knows more about basketball than me. But it's like, it's the same kind of thing as like when people start to laugh at like the little Monty-isms when stuff gets bad, you know, it's like that where it's like, it's very cute and like cool to say when you're winning executive of the year. And then when you're 500 in the middle of the season, it's like, hey, remember when James Jones talked about the index cards with the roster? Guess the index card was ripped in half this time or whatever they would say. So it's ugly, but I think we're on the same page. We need to have more difference in the next one. I hope. Are you confident we will not overlap? My next ones are rapid fire, so they're more silly.
I don't think we're gonna overlap.
Okay.
Because I almost led with one of mine, but yeah.
Okay. So I have some team branding related stuff. I have some like goodwill with the old heads stuff in here. I have one real one for this season. So we'll get into some rapid fire next. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis all year long. We have football odds for this weekend. The Jacksonville Jaguars win. They are in. They're favored by 6.5 over one of the worst quarterbacks that I've ever seen in a rookie season. So bet that one. I feel like it might actually get uglier than that. We have the Packers are playing for their lives as well. They are favored at home on Sunday Night Football. I won't tell you the Cardinals odds because it's one of the bigger lines I've ever seen for a Cardinals game. So you can check that out on your own if you would like to. The Suns, do we have Suns odds for this next upcoming game on Friday night? We do. The Suns are underdogs at home. So maybe you're going to the game and you want to put some money down, have a little more fun with it. Wherever you're looking, whatever you need, BetOnline is your number one source for sports betting info. So head to the website today. That's betonline.net or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, back to you. I will give you the stage here, Aaron, to give us your final prediction. Maybe another one popped into your head as we were talking, but you told me you had three, so take it away.
For my last one is we should sit CB3 for a bit and let DSJ start.
Wait, Dennis Smith Jr.?
Dwayne Washington Jr.
I was like, hold on. I think he might be available, so that would definitely fall in the outlandish category. All right, Washington. I thought about a Dwayne Washington prediction. I thought about, like, he's going to get a full roster spot by the end of the season because people forget it. I think he's on a two-way, although Monty playing him for 2 minutes in the game the other night makes me think Monty forgot he was on a two-way.
That. That was my main one is just Monty doesn't like Hoopers, but we can do that.
That's not a prediction. That's just like analysis.
No,
that's accurate reading of the team. So, the problem with that is they would literally not win any of those games.
I mean, not like sit. I mean, just Chris Paul comes off the bench.
Okay.
And I think Chris Paul should be with the second unit and DSJ, even when Book comes back too, by the way.
Just campaign doesn't factor in at all here. You just
I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm sorry. I'm done with it.
Okay.
The times when Dwayne Washington Jr. is fun has been more fun than so many of the things that Cam Johnson has done. He's aggressive, he's smaller and still gets fouled. He has just a green light in his head, maybe not from Monty, but in his head he has one. And I just like, we don't have anybody like that because Monty doesn't like players like that. And I think that's why we get so weirdly excited when he goes off, because Monty doesn't really allow that type of basketball.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Is this residual from Aaron Holiday? Is this just like continuing the grudge?
This is even different from that. Because Aaron Holiday at least kind of plays into the offense. Sometimes it doesn't seem like Dwayne Washington Jr. cares about the offense. And he's like, putting the ball up. Yeah. I think sometimes when the ball touches his hand, he's like, y'all pass it to me. You're not getting it back. And I don't think that. I think we need somebody like that. Maybe not in like that body, but I think we've always needed a player like that.
Did you know his usage rate is higher than Devin Booker's? It's 31.8.
He gets him up, and I like it.
He does. The impressive thing, like, I think he actually needs to get better at going to the basket. He's very, very jumper heavy, which actually makes me feel like Monty should like him more, because that's like right up the alley of how this offense was built. But I think he needs to get, like, you know, drive and actually shoot at the basket more often. But the impressive thing
is, no respect from the refs, though.
No, he doesn't, and he probably
gets,
won't.
Like, zero.
But he's smooth, and he has touch, you know what I mean? So it's like, even if he's not drawing fouls, I feel like he could just be a finisher still. Like, I'm not saying he's Kyrie, but he has craft and whatnot. No, it's that he doesn't turn the ball over. Like, a high usage like that, but his turnover rate is only 9.2%, which is also lower than Book's. So, I mean, he doesn't, like, waste possessions in, like, young point guard type of way, like you would normally think. As long as he's not doing that, like, is the shot selection ugly? Yeah, but like you're kind of saying, I don't really know what's a better shot. Who should he be passing it to if he's not taking it? I don't know.
Just having an ISO, like, looking some – we just don't have the – with Book out especially, just without the picks, without just – clock going down, just, all right, we need to get a shot up in 10 seconds and not run a pick and roll because they're going to switch and, like, all that. And just ISOing and somebody just looking somebody dead in the eye and getting a bucket. I think, who did he do that against? I forgot that.
I mean, he's had a bunch of big quarters. I think Memphis, Miami.
Yeah, it was Memphis when Ja was in front of him or Dylan Brooks was in front of him, and he didn't really care. It just seems like the moment is fine with him, and he doesn't need all the extra stuff every once in a while that, like, the offense kind of has to do to run.
Does Dwayne Washington make the last-second shot to beat who did they play the other night and lost to? Cleveland? Does he make that out-of-timeout shot more than McHale does?
With the way Mikael was shooting, I would have trusted it more. I would have been completely fine with him coming off and running the clock down too low and getting a bad shot up. I would have been fine.
I don't know if you're wrong.
Book would have done the same thing. Book would have sat in the corner and gotten a really bad shot up, but I would have trusted it still.
Book's signature in those situations is a foot on the line too. So I think, you know, it's Book, so of course it's a better shot, but you're... In terms of just, like, what we all think of as good and bad shots, it doesn't really get much worse than that with the hand in your face. So maybe Washington at least might have taken a three or, like, a closer two. So I don't hate it. All right, I have a few. I'll start with my real one, and then we'll get into some more ridiculous stuff. My prediction, and maybe the playoff part of this is what people will find the most absurd at this point in the season, but I have Josh Okogie will close at least one playoff game this season. He'll be in the closing lineup for at least one playoff game.
You kind of lost me at playoffs, but yeah. I think Monty likes him a lot, and I just like his game. Like, on defense, crashing the boards, like, he's just... Yeah, Monty would have to start him, especially going small. I think that would just be really fun with a small lineup and him and just having dudes that can move, because we don't know what Chris Paul is going to be or if he's here. And he's still going to, like I said, the playbook's out on this team. So they're still going to press him and bump into him and do all this stuff that they think is going to wear an old man down. So I think sometimes we're going to have to go small and kind of just push the pace a little bit. So, yeah, I would like him being on the floor closing.
I mean, what we saw against Toronto was kind of what inspired this. The fact that Monty's wanted to start all these games big for a while, and then all of a sudden he plays Toronto, which, in the type of versatility and whatever that the Raptors have, they're not a good team right now, but they have that, and that's what you see in the playoffs, and he defaulted to going to Okogie. So we'll see. We'll see if there's any playoff games to be had, let alone Okogie closing it. But all right, the Suns will bring back their Valley jerseys as their statement uniforms next season, because they're not the city anymore and they really like the originative stuff, but they kind of, like, halfway did a Valley jersey with this year's statement edition. They tried to say, oh, the pixelated whatever, that's the same thing. I say they just go fully with it and they're going to bring them back next year.
I don't even, like, was that just a league thing if they couldn't do it, because the Valley jerseys were so popular, especially here. Like, it just, it's just burning money. So
they said from the jump they weren't going to, like, they were only going to be a short-term thing. I don't know if it's, like, a Nike rule or a league rule, or if they just want to go through them. I would be I would imagine it's a Nike thing because, like, soccer teams do that all the time. They just have new stuff every year because then you have to buy it. But in this case, it was popular enough that people will keep buying it. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, just like the Sunburst jersey. Like, if they were going to bring it back, they were always going to sell out. So I feel like that's another one of those things because a lot of people that wanted it still haven't gotten it yet.
All right, one more. Well, I have two more. The Suns will put Larry Nance Sr. in the Ring of Honor this year. And then they will only do it under the condition that he makes his son sign here in the offseason. Because I really like Larry Nance Jr. as a player, and I want him. Plus, Larry Nance Sr. is not in the Ring of Honor, so.
That's some real Galaxy Brain stuff, so I like it. Like, that's just playing some Game of Thrones Littlefinger chess right now. I can't see it happening, but yeah, I would like Larry Nance here.
No, it's not going to happen, but I do think independent of one another, those two things I like. And then when I was looking at who's not in the Ring of Honor, as people have noted, we probably need to put the Stoudemire one on the back burner for right now. He's dealing with some legal trouble.
A little bit.
And Sean Marion, he might just hate the Suns so much that it doesn't matter anymore. So I was like, all right, who else could they put in there? Larry Nance, there's people behind him in terms of like franchise records and whatever that are in, and he's not, so let's put him in. And then I was like, I think his son is a free agent, and he is, and he could fit here. So maybe I'll separate them. Maybe it's not like a blackmail situation, but it just happens anyway. All right, my last one is people who have listened to this podcast for a long time will know that I've been big on a statue for a certain player, but I'm actually flipping it this time. Instead of Diana Taurasi, who I think is the best career to ever happen in the arena that they play in, I think Brittany Griner. Build a statue for Brittany Griner. That feels more likely at this point, just considering everything she went through and how much it meant for her to come back. And I mean, when she plays again at the end of May,
it's gonna be nuts.
Holy crap. I will just tell everybody now that if you care about basketball or Phoenix or any of the combinations of those two things, you should try to be there. But that's my last one. It's not even me saying they should, because I know, like, you know, whatever, a lot goes into all that stuff, but that would be cool. And I think they should have a statue. Every team has a statue, especially one with as much history as the Suns. They just don't have anything to commemorate anything. So why not start with her?
Yeah. And to piggyback off of that, I think the first Griner game is going to be the most watched WNBA game of all time.
I think you're right. Yeah, when she was obviously gone, it wasn't like the thing I was trying to like, oh, well, what are the ratings going to be? But now that she's home, I think you're totally right. I think it'll be, I mean, it's literally like international news when she takes the court again, and it's happening like 5 miles from where we all live. It's crazy, but I agree. And it's not just like, I'm sure people listening to this will be like, well, so-and-so had a better career. But it's also not just about the Russia stuff. It's like, she's an MVP candidate. She's won championships for this team. That's more than any son has ever done. So I think she would deserve it.
Yeah. And she's like one of the greatest college basketball players of all time too. So yeah, I could just definitely see it happening. It would be like the dynamic duo between her and Taurasi. So yeah, I can definitely see that.
All right. That'll wrap us up. Hopefully you enjoyed one day of not having to think about the games. Unfortunately, there is one tonight. I hate to say unfortunately, but that's the reality right now. No campaign in that game. They've already announced, and obviously Booker and Cam Johnson, but healthy other than that, and they are back at home, and Miami's had some bad games recently as well. So you never know what will happen, but I will talk to you all next on Monday. Brandon will be back to recap the two games over the weekend. I'll be at the one on Sunday, so that's what you all have to look forward to. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen to close out your week. Now go make Locked On Sports Today your second listen to get caught up on everything else going on around the world of sports, and I will talk to you all next week.